Welcome to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. I'm Ann Thomas, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, the Executive Learning Strategist for Michigan Virtual. On this edition of the show, we're going to be talking about designing student-centered learning environments, and the focus would be on personalized learning for students. We have got a fabulous panel assembled, and it's going to be an interesting and informative show coming up next. Welcome to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, the Executive Learning Strategist for Michigan Virtual. And Dave, on this edition of the show, we're talking about designing student-centered learning environments. And our focus is going to be on personalized learning for students. We've got a wonderful panel assembled here for this show. First of all, we say hello to Dr. Kiana Warren, the Associate Executive Director at Purdue Polytechnic High School in Indianapolis. Dr. Warren, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
And we also have Virgil Hammonds. He is the Chief Learning Officer for the Knowledge Works Foundation in Cincinnati. Virgil, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you and to learn with you all.
And last but not least, Dr. Steve Matthews, the superintendent of the Rockford School District. Dr. Matthews, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Dr. Kiana Warren, let's just start out, and I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Give us your background.
So I am just so happy to be here. I've been blessed to have a variety of experiences that have really led me to understand the importance of student-centered design. I started out my career as a teacher, and I was able to teach all grades, elementary up through high school, which gives you a really good perspective of the learning process over time. And one thing I always say, one thing I learned was working with all grades. We're all big kids at heart, and we're all learners, and we all have commonalities with how we like to learn. I started my school leadership journey with Goodwill Education Initiatives, and that really grew my passion for thinking beyond what already exists, going beyond and thinking about non-traditional ways, because the schools that GEI ran were all non-traditional. We had a school that supported traditional age students with unique learning needs, and it was a big picture learning. In addition to, we had adult high schools where we were able to support students to get their high school diplomas even beyond the age where the traditional systems wouldn't allow students to come. So just a beautiful journey to see a 17-year-old learn next to a 70-year-old. There's just so much beautiful collaboration that happens there. And then landed at Purdue Polytechnic High School, where I was part of the founding team and was able to lead one of the schools before transitioning into this new role. And just an honor to be able to engage in with folks that are as passionate about deep learning and understanding that at the heart and center of deep learning is voice and choice for students, and really allowing them to be part of the design process and just engage in a very authentic way. So just really grateful for that journey and all the opportunities that it's brought.
Thank you, Dr. Warren. And Virgil Hammonds, could you give us your background?
Certainly. I'm glad to be with you all and with some friends here and new friends. Much like Dr. Warren, also taught in all grades, K through 12. The most interesting were at the primary level, where I really had no understanding of how difficult that is, but learned such a great deal. And I would say my purpose and my true understanding of what education is all about was really centered in my early tenure as a middle school teacher and high school principal, where I really learned about what it meant to really build structures, partnerships that truly met the needs of every learner, and what that could look like, not just in partnership in my own classroom but with community, with colleagues, and most importantly, with kids, what those designs could mean and what those could look like. So I've served in a variety of roles, educator at all levels, a high school principal in Central California, a small community named Lindsay, and currently or previously had served as a superintendent here where I currently reside in Central Maine, and now as Chief Learning Officer at KnowledgeWorks. I get to serve and learn and collaborate with tremendous educators like those represented here.
And Dr. Steve Matthews, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'd be happy to. I got into education a little bit through a side door. I started out as a social worker. I worked in a youth detention facility in Lubbock, Texas, where I counseled and worked with youth who were incarcerated waiting for trial. And then I was a social worker in the foster care unit in Lubbock, Texas as well. And it was there that I realized that you had to listen to students. You had to listen to the youth that you worked with. You had to hear their stories. You had to come to understand who they were as people before you could really make a difference in their life. And it was at that point that I decided that I needed to get into a profession where I was on the front end of problems instead of the back end of problems. And so I got into education. And I've been a teacher in the middle school. I've been now, this is my 15th year as a superintendent in the state of Michigan. And I think I've carried those lessons with me throughout all the various stops I've made along the way of really trying to listen to students and hear their stories and try to create learning experiences that matter to them.
Wow, Dr. Dave Richards, this is quite the panel. I'm going to let you take it from here.
Thank you, Ann. So excited to have this group of leaders with us today and to have this conversation around personalizing learning, but really creating student-centered environments where the kid is at the front of every decision. Virgil, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with you. You travel the country. You have an incredibly busy schedule working with school districts across the country, both at the local and the state level. As we come out of the pandemic, what are you seeing that districts are struggling with as they try to design for the future of learning?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And it is a real privilege and honor to engage communities across the country as they're rethinking what learning could look like. And I'd say there's a couple of really interesting ideas that I wanted to share with you all that would help transition, transform, recenter where learning happens. And one of those first things is, we'll start with the student. Probably for most of our experiences, for those here and also for those listening, oftentimes our educational experience was about compliance. What is it that we need to do? What is it that I need to present or perform? And it was really about order and following directions more than anything else. And what we have seen a lot through the pandemic is this thirst to really engage learners in different ways, right? So we didn't have access like we had before. And so educators across the country and systems across the country started to rethink what does learner engagement look like? So this movement from compliance to engagement. And now the real opportunity that's come up that is really exciting to hear about, and I'm sure we'll hear it from Dr. Matthews and Dr. Warren, is this move from compliance to engagement to empowerment, right? Where learners really start to own learning structures within their learning community and not just within their classrooms or their schools, but also throughout the community, which is why oftentimes at KnowledgeWorks, we don't necessarily refer to school systems or school districts in that way. We refer to them as learning communities because it's now transcended those school walls. So again, that move for learners, that move from compliance to progression to engagement, which is fantastic, to one that's fully about their empowerment to own the learning structures. Another really interesting strategy that we're starting to see to help accelerate innovation in learning communities is this kickstart and focus on personalizing professional development for educators as well, but to amplify that or multiply opportunities for educators, seeing a lot of focus on teacher residencies, which oftentimes happens at the higher ed level. So the opportunity to do some research, to learn, to implement, to apply, to refocus. But now that's being done at the K-12 level as well. Again, the thinking being, how do we focus on what the future of learning could look like But how do we learn from that immediately so that we can apply that instantly with our learners and throughout our community? Some really exciting strategies that, again, are focused on how do we provide and support the needs of our learners and do that instantaneously, and also not just in isolation in classrooms, but in partnership with community.
You know, it's so true that this transformation has been accelerated because of the pandemic. And Dr. Warren, you've been doing this work. Obviously, I've been following the efforts that you've been making at Purdue Polytechnic and looking forward to coming down and making a visit with a group of educators from Michigan. But can you describe the environment at Purdue Polytechnic and just so folks can kind of get an idea of what drives that work every day?
So it's such an honor to talk about this because I just love our schools and our students and our amazing community that we're building. But I always tell people, come visit. You have to see it for it to make sense, but I'll try to paint the picture. So I describe our school as looking more like a tech startup than a school. And we were very focused on making sure that our school doesn't look institutionalized, that it doesn't look like a place too traditional, because we're trying to extend beyond those boundaries. And in the foundation of our school, even down to the furniture, we have flexible seating. We have different levels you can work on. Some kids work better standing up. Some people need a walking desk. All of those things are incorporated into our space. And every day the learning looks different because students need different things at different times. So one of the things that we did when we were thinking about the design of our school, we said, we have to truly be student-centered, not in our words, but in our actions. So the first thing that went out the door was the master schedule. Master schedules exist because they make sense for getting teachers in front of the same students. But we're like, what if a student one day really needs more math time, but one day they need more English time? Now, we believe our, and I'll tell you, we give traditional credits, all of those things. But we really doubled down on project-based learning and authentic learning. We have a lot of partnerships with the community to make sure we're engaging with them. And so students get to pick projects. They don't pick classes, but they pick these integrated projects in which they get to really hone in on their passions while also learning the academic content. So it's a very different environment, and kids are running around using the design thinking process and language like empathy interviews. And I need to iterate on that idea. And we really try to step back and let the students help. We try to help them discover their superpowers and their brilliance, but we just try to get out of their way.
You are listening to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. Let's take a quick break, and we will continue this conversation on personalized learning for students in just a few minutes. Are listening to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. I'm Ann Thomas. I am here with my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards. He is an executive learning strategist with Michigan Virtual, and a great panel today, Dr. Dave. We're talking about personalized learning for students, and I'm going to let you continue now with Dr. Steve Matthews, who also, I am sure, has some fabulous ideas on this subject.
Dr. Matthews, it is such an incredible time to be a superintendent in a local school district right now. It's been very challenging because of the pandemic and all the issues that have come with that. But it seems like we're moving from that threat of the pandemic to the opportunity that district leaders are recognizing. Now is the time, seize the day, to make some of these structural changes that we've been wanting to make for a while. From your lens as a local superintendent, what are you thinking as you consider the next 12 months, 24 months as a leader?
You know, it really is an opportune time to be a leader, especially in a local school district. The pandemic really did open up some doors and help us all to see that there is more than one way to do education. You know, the big challenge that we face is that we've been doing school the same way for so long that people are really hesitant to embrace the opportunity to change. You have the students and families who have done very well in traditional school models, and the universities, quite frankly, aren't very open to new ways of grading students, aren't open to new ways of counting credit, for example. And so parents in those traditional school districts that have done very well are very hesitant to embrace change at times because they've been successful in the system that we've had. And then you have the students in districts that haven't done very well, and they may be suspicious, saying that you're trying to change the rules now, and that will prevent us from walking through that door into those successful post-secondary experiences. And so the tension between those two really creates difficulties for local school districts as they try to help people see and create a vision for what education really can be like. You know, we've had opportunities through the pandemic, and we've had great educators create opportunities for students that have never been there before. And now the question is, can we make them part of the regular environment of school? Mm-hmm. And can we really begin to listen to student voice? And can we really understand what students are trying to tell us? When, for example, they would turn off their screens during a Zoom session, or when they would create very creative and wildly interesting projects outside of school. And we say, why can't you be that engaged in school? And they will tell us that school isn't really that meaningful to them, that they find pleasure and enjoyment and curiosity outside the confines of school. How do we bring that into the school system? And those are the lessons that we have to try to figure out how to integrate now into the more traditional way of doing school.
Dr. Warren, can you respond to that? I mean, I see the reaction and your thoughts. I know how passionate you are about this. What can you react to what Dr. Matthews shared?
Yeah, I agree with everything Dr. Matthews has said, and that for too long schools have been, and also with what Virgil said, for too long schools have been hostile places where it's about compliance versus creativity and engagement and learning and empowerment. I love how Virgil said that, because the future of work, we don't know what that is. We don't know what it'll look like, because the jobs that that exist now, I would have never dreamed of them when I was in school myself. And so I think the biggest thing is we need to feed that curiosity. We want to make sure that we have students who can collaborate, communicate, and innovate. And if and all of that matters much more than memorizing facts. And I always say, if it's something I can Google, it's not something that I need to memorize. And we really need to start thinking future forward, because if we're stuck with like, let's prepare the kids for the 21st century, we're a century behind. And I'm not going to let the students here be a century behind. And what I will say, a big learning for us during the pandemic really kind of helped us double down and go even deeper into what we believe about project-based learning, collaboration, and the human-centered design, is that we learned that students really needed the engagement with each other, the collaboration. They miss coming together. We have seen an increase in the number of students who engage with robotics and engage with sporting events. As soon as they could, they were back and ready and excited. And we need to play on that. Like I always say that no matter what, the students hold the culture. So we might as well work together to make it the place that they want to be versus trying to get that compliance. So I think there's so many lessons learned. And it would be a shame if in the United States we missed this, because the possibilities are endless. With I think during the pandemic we learned that you can meet with people from across the world very quickly. So I just completely agree with everything that's said. I get excited about conversations like this because I see it working, and that's the question that we get sometimes too. We saw even despite the pandemic, we saw academic growth for our students because we still doubled down on these projects and things like that. So. Agree with so much, everything that's been said.
And Virgil, as you think about the opportunity, moving from that threat to opportunity, as Michael Horn describes it in his new book, what are those opportunities that are right in front of leaders that you say, hey, first and foremost, focus on this one and then this one. These are easy wins for you as a leader.
Certainly. So there are a couple, actually, and it builds on Dr. Warren and Dr. Matthews' commentary. The first is, let's be really clear about what our vision is, and how do we build that shared vision together, right? So it's not something that we as superintendents or school boards build in isolation. It's how do we collectively as a community agree upon what the vision is for our learners and for our community. What is that future we aspire to accomplish together? And then what are our roles in our shared roles in lifting that vision to a reality? And doing that process together is just so cathartic and healthy, and it creates a new excitement. I think oftentimes as leaders, we think we're the ones that have to have the answers, when the reality is that the answers are in the room, right? Or they're in the community. And so how do we collectively build that together? The other is, I would say, let's be really clear about what the expectations for learning are, right? So Dr. Warren said, let's double down on this learning infrastructure. So what is it that we actually want our learners to learn? And let's actually create the flexibility and the opportunity for kids to demonstrate that learning in ways that make sense for each one of them. But before we can get to that personalized learning piece, what we are seeing a lot in communities, innovative communities like those represented here, are crystal clear, transparent expectations for learning. However, with great flexibility in how learners achieve and demonstrate that.
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Matthews, high achieving districts sometimes can struggle with this transformation. You know, as you mentioned earlier, they know the rules. They've been very successful at the old game, the old rules of engagement. How do you lead that transformation where people don't feel like you're tinkering with the system, but you're actually making real systemic changes as a leader and getting to that place where there is a shared vision for learning?
You know, I think there's a couple of things that we can do. One is you can create opportunities for the parents and community to hear from students. You know, in Novi, for example, we had a conversation about student stress. And instead of me or our psychologist or our counselors getting up and talking about student stress, we brought the students in and they talked about student stress and they managed the small group conversations that we had. And it was so much more powerful than if I would have stood up and said almost the same thing, because all of a sudden these parents were saying, wow, I didn't realize. And these were their kids, their own kids that they have in their cars as they drive them to school, that they sit around the dinner table with. And all of a sudden they were seeing them in a different way. And so I think one thing you can do is certainly encourage and help parents listen to the students so that they hear them and see them in new and different ways. A second way, I think, is that you create opportunities for parents to have discussions about ideas outside of a traditional environment. We had book clubs that we did in Novi, in which you know, we'd read books like What School Could Be by Ted Dentersmith and Creating Innovators by Tony Wagner and books like that. And so all of a sudden, parents begin to see that, oh, we can do school a little differently. Oh, there's another way to approach this to help our students learn. And so I think, you create those opportunities and then you move with the people who want to move and you venture forth and create opportunities with those people who are ready to move forward. And as you do and you find success, then more people are going to want to join and push forward and create new models for doing education.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that we're spending a lot of time talking about, both at Michigan Virtual and within our Future Learning Council, is the concept of micro schools and really talking through, is there a way to make it safe or maybe less risk challenging to create in smaller pockets of innovation within school districts? So instead of disrupting the entire system, you create these opt-in opportunities for kids where it could be related to a pathway, a particular program. Virgil, are you seeing that nationally where people are looking at these smaller pockets of innovation and then scaling that as examples?
Absolutely. There's a common mantra. Start small, think big, right? So that's absolutely where you're seeing kind of these rapid cycles of innovation that can create momentum for scale to happen. And that that absolutely is a common strategy that's occurring in school systems across the country, Dave.
Dave, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about personalized learning. And I've got this question kind of swirling around in my head as I listen to this great conversation. And it is, if I walk into a classroom as a student or a parent, what would this look like down the road? So that's the question for each panelist when we come back from break. You are listening to Learning Matters, brought to you by Michigan Virtual. We'll be back right after this. Great conversation here, Dr. Dave Richards, on Learning Matters. We're talking to a wonderful panel of state and national experts. We have Dr. Kiana Warren. She is the Associate Executive Director at the Purdue Polytechnic High School in Indianapolis. We have Virgil Hammonds. He is the Chief Learning Officer with the Knowledge Works Foundation. And we have Dr. Steve Matthews, Superintendent of Rockford School District. And I have a question for the group. And I want each person, we'll do a little round table, go around, talk to everybody, to paint a picture for me. If I'm a parent or a student, and I go into a classroom in the hopefully near future, and the classroom is focused on personalized learning for the student. So I'm going to start with Dr. Steve Matthews. Dr. Matthews, can you paint this picture for me? What does this look like, let's say, if it's a math class or an English class?
Well, I'll give you a couple examples. One is it probably wouldn't be a math class or an English class. It would be a class. It would be a class in which we had an incubator class, for example, at Novi High School. Dr. R.J. Weber was kind of the inspiration for this, and we had three teachers at the high school that really embraced it. And it was a class where students came in and thought about a project that they wanted to do. And the incubator really was just that. It was an opportunity for them to think through and percolate and develop their project. And they also developed projects as a group. And what you would see is students working in small groups. You would see students consulting with experts. You would see students using their teacher as a resource. You would see the teacher as a guide saying, have you thought about this, instead of lecturing to those students. And so it really is a classroom that's full of conversation, full of small groups, full of individualized learning opportunities, all under the direction of a teacher who really is focused on helping those students find a path. A second example would be we created elementary gardens at all of our buildings. And so you would see students go out in the gardens and they would learn about planting and harvesting. But more importantly, they would learn about the growth cycle in science. They would learn about the importance of sunlight and oxygen and how those things work together. And so they were learning these science concepts, but not out of a book. They were learning them in real life. And so those are two examples of what classrooms would look like. So they're learning math, science, English, the ability to communicate, collaborate, think creatively in ways outside of a traditional kind of teacher-led classroom. It was a student-led, student-voice classroom experience.
It's so exciting just to think about that. I mean, it's really awesome. It's a wonderful way to learn. Virgil Hammonds, what do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I can't help but smile just hearing
Matthew
talk about those learning environments, right? And I recall visiting a community recently in Nevada, and there was just a lot of noise coming from as I was walking towards this classroom, and I walked into the class, and what I didn't see was the teacher up front and center. I was greeted by the teacher that said, do you hear that? And I did. I heard lots of noise, lots of talking. And she said, that's the noise of learning, right? Yeah. So it's kids amplifying their voice, sharing their ideas. And so I think there are a couple things that oftentimes we hear from learning communities. When you know this more learner-centered design is actually living in reality is when learners can essentially ask, answer a series of questions on their own, right? Because in the past, it was more about what is a teacher doing? And now it's all about what is a learner doing? And how much ownership or how much empowerment do they have to own these structures? And so a couple, you'll know you're there when you can answer a series of questions. And the common questions are, if you were to walk up to a learner, any learner throughout any of these learning environments in Dr. Matthews and Dr. Warren's schools, I know you will. They will be able to answer these questions. So, what are you learning? So, then being very clear about what it is that they are trying to accomplish, trying to achieve, and secondly, how do you know when you've mastered it? So when learners can articulate exactly when they know they've actually achieved what they're trying to accomplish with their learning, their expectations for learning. When learners can articulate that, it's just incredible to see. And in a variety of environments, as Dr. Matthews has shared and Dr. Warren as well. And another one is, how are you applying that learning? So it's not just about doing something, right? Or turning something in. It's what are you doing with that learning? So the application, taking that to different environments, whether it's those gardens or with in concert with community partners, what does it look like when you've taken that newly mastered content and applied it in ways that are empowering and motivating to each learner? And then the other key element is when you know learners have owned the system is when they can clearly articulate what comes next. Mm-hmm. So here's how I'm taking my new learnings and applying it with these other content areas or in these other ways. So you know you've reached there when learners are able to share a variety of answers to those questions.
And Dr. Kiana Warren, I know that you absolutely love these ideas because you are smiling from ear to ear and shaking your head. Absolutely, yes.
So I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's really important when I walk into a space, I don't know who the teacher is because you don't have that power dynamic. In addition, the students are carrying the cognitive load, but also it's a shared learning experience and shared passion. So you're getting a teacher to learn with a student who's passionate about something else. So I'll give an example of a project we're working on. One of the projects that our students are working on, and I say we because I love to join this, but we have a group of students who are passionate about coffee. And so they're working on creating a coffee business where they will bring a coffee cart to the school. It's authentic because kids like coffee. It's authentic because at the end of this project, they know where they're going. They're going to have a coffee cart at the school. They're building it. They're working in the makerspace to actually build the cart. They've been on multiple field trips where they've worked with different local coffee organizations to ask questions about the business. So they're learning from experts. So one of the big things about personalized learning is everyone's doing something different. Everyone has an opportunity and you have a diverse group of learners. So I'm talking racial diversity, SES diversity, cognitive diversity. We go much further when we learn from people who are learn with people who are different from us. And another really important piece, for me is it's super unclear who has an IEP in the class. It's super unclear who's high ability because students are just coming together and bringing their personal talents and not othered based on their learning differences. And so I think the only thing I would add is just that diversity piece and that the beautiful part of it. I love how that Dr. Matthews was like, I wouldn't call it a class. Like we don't use, those are bad words in our environment. They're not classes, they're learning experiences, they're projects. And I think it's even that change of vocabulary that deeply matters. Students, it doesn't even have to be a classroom. It doesn't have to be a building for the learning to happen. Learning happens outside of the classrooms as well. And just making sure we can capture that in a really authentic way for our learners.
And Dr. Dave Richards, I'll let you take it from here. I love your comment, get rid of cemetery seating. That's a perfect comment for this.
You know, the traditional seating in a classroom is so symbolic of the structure that has just held us back for so long. And, you know, we refer to it jokingly as cemetery seating, but when the kids are in the rows and all facing the same direction, it's not very different than a cemetery that you drive by. And, you know, I think part of it is getting leaders to understand what this vision looks like and then having the courage, because it takes courage to do this work. It's messy work and there's a lot of challenges that come with it. But when your focus is on providing every child with the opportunity to be successful, that really drives you and pulls you forward. I think one of the things, and Virgil, I'd love to have you respond to this. One of the challenges when you think about different learning models, people will get tripped up and say, It's not rigorous enough. Yeah. Is this as rigorous as what we've known traditionally as we've prepared for the SAT or the ACT and all of that? Can you respond to that? How would you answer that question, the depth of knowledge that required to do this new work?
Yeah.
Well, just in listening to Dr. Warren and Dr. Matthews' examples, I would say those are rigorous examples of learning in themselves. But I think a piece that folks also need to understand, and it was mentioned earlier, the idea of being really clear about what the expectations for learning are. So that means being transparent about what does it mean to master a learning target or to be proficient in a particular standard, define that language that might be used locally. So being really clear about what that depth of knowledge is. But here's the part that I believe Dr. Warren and Dr. Matthews learners would also be able to articulate that perhaps in a traditional system learners might not be able to, is that learners actually understand what mastery or what depth of knowledge is necessary for demonstration of that learning target. In the past, it's we as educators held that standard, right? I'm not going to necessarily tell you what's on the test. In these environments, we actually have learners that have a clear understanding of what the expectation of learning is, what that depth of knowledge is, and they are advocating for how they are going to demonstrate their mastery.
And you know, the growth mindset has been a big part of our conversations in schools as leaders. Dr. Matthews, when you think about having a growth mindset for other leaders to get them to do this work, how do you convince or persuade someone that this is what our work, this is our main thing, this is what we should be focused on right now?
I think the best way to convince leaders is to take them into a group of students and have them listen to students. Students can convince even the most hardened educator that they are interested in learning, but they want the learning to be engaging and meaningful. And if you can get leaders to listen to students, then they will understand that they have to change what we're doing right now.
And Dr. Warren, just your thoughts, if you could tell leaders one thing, what's that thing that you would say, let this always be your North Star as you do this work?
Student-centered, and in a world of blockbuster, be Netflix.
I love it. Yeah, that's really interesting. Dr. Kiana Warren, Dr. Steve Matthews, and Virgil Hammonds, thank you so much for your time today. We definitely are going to have to get you all back together again for another show. This has been fascinating. And you've been listening to Learning Matters. On behalf of my co-host, Dr. Dave Richards, I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your day.